Hello all and welcome to the No Postal Podcast. If you've ever wondered what life might be like if your house had wheels, or if psychedelic mushrooms were a food group, or if you didn't know where you were going to defecate next, tune in weekly while Liam and Taylor try to figure it out.
Greetings everyone.
Welcome to the No Postal Podcast.
Welcome to take 3 of episode 2. First two takes didn't go so peachy.
Yeah, we've tried to record this 3 times, but anyways.
Third time's a charm.
So where are we, Liam?
We're in Lake Tahoe, California, after making a long, very long trip from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Yeah, so we've been road tripping to Tennessee. So we started in Vancouver, like Liam said, drove down the coast, so through Washington, the coast of Oregon, and then into California, and we've made it to now Lake Tahoe, which is amazing and beautiful. I've always wanted to come here. And then tomorrow, we're going to Yosemite. So exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yosemite National Park, which is probably the most popular national park in the entire country. And you need a reservation to drive into the place.
Which we didn't know until these people we met told us. So you can drive in before 6 a.m. or after 4 p.m. So we're going to drive in before 6 a.m.
And there's nowhere to park for free, really, inside Yosemite. So we got a 45-minute drive to our free campsite. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it is what it is. At least we get to see
it. For a couple of people who usually don't wake up before 8:30.
I know. So this is going to be tough for us. But anyways,
we're here today to talk about the time that we almost joined the Hare Krishna cult.
Yeah, so we almost ended up in a cult, and it all started with Liam. Liam, explain.
That was very intense. I like it. Anyways, so... Just after Christmas of last year, I started to get in contact with this Vedic eco-village in the mountains of British Columbia. And so I think I found it by looking up Yoga Ashram. I looked up Yoga Ashram BC, and there's one way up north in British Columbia. It's pretty close to where we were working in the fall, which we never got to go to. So I've always wanted to go to one. So this was my second attempt to go and see one. And anyways, it's not a yoga ashram. It's something very different.
Much different.
So it's technically what they call it is a Vedic eco-village. And so the word Vedic really stuck out to me because of my love for Hinduism.
And like Ayurvedic living, which we've recently like...
Ayurvedic living?
Yeah, learned about and stuff.
Yeah. Ayurvedic being food as medicine, for anybody who doesn't know.
Food as medicine and like food, like what you eat and what you do as like a lifestyle.
Yeah. We don't know enough about it to go into greater depth than that. But yeah, food is medicine. But yeah, so we've really been interested in like Eastern ideology, Eastern ways of life. And so I was like, wow, like a Hindu village in the mountains in BC. How crazy. Like we need to go check this place out. So I started to email the guy or email the correspondent there. And we were going back and forth for a few months. And finally, we ended up heading out on our trip that we're currently still on. And the very beginning of it was to go to this village and kind of just chill out for a couple weeks and help around the village in exchange for food and shelter. For anybody who doesn't know, there's lots of volunteer programs where you show up at somebody's organic farm and you exchange your labor for food and shelter. So this is exactly like that. I kind of figured that it was going to be just like a typical work away or woofing sort of ideal, but it was only 2 hours a day. And then they fed us and they gave us a place to stay.
Yeah, only 2 hours a day of work, which is like not very typical. Usually for a workaway, it's like 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. And you can stay for like as long or short as you want, depending on what the host needs. But 2 hours a day with like, you don't have to pay anything is kind of rare.
Yeah, which was
so dug that.
Yeah, and the place that they're in is like incredibly beautiful. It's a few hours north of Kamloops, BC. It's tucked away in the mountains. I think it's called the Venables Valley or something.
Yeah.
Near Ashcroft, BC. And it's 1,600 acres of land, of agricultural land that they acquired in the 70s or something.
Yeah.
The person who greeted us actually told us that it's British Columbia's oldest intentional community. And for anybody who doesn't know, again, an intentional community is basically just like a commune. It's people living in a small community with each other. Typically growing their own food, typically relying on each other for services that otherwise you would look to greater society for, which was another draw for us because we love the idea of communal living. We've always wanted to try it, and this was like our first taste of it, even though it was kind of a sour taste in the end. It was still cool to see people living like that. So anyways, we made the trip up to Ashcroft, we were greeted by the guy I'd been in correspondence with, and he told us that we were kind of living on like a half of the property that wasn't the same as the other half. So the other half was the Sharanagati village.
And it's like this established village with like lots of houses, like big houses and stuff like that. And most people have farms and whatever. And those residents are mostly older and have been there since the start of the village. They've been there for like 50 years.
Yeah. So they're like the pioneers who started it essentially, but they essentially live like a small suburb, at least from what we could gather. And what the person that we were with told us, that it's more like living in a small subdivision than it is like living in a intentional community.
A lot of those people still work like outside the village. So they still have jobs and stuff like that. So the side of the village that we were on was the eco village, and it's run by only two people, so a family, and it's much more, you know, like rugged, like it's actual,
it's
like
truly off-grid,
rough in it, like no running water, no electricity essentially. Like I think there was some light.
No, there was electricity. It was solar panel.
All solar powered, you know, like outhouses, no indoor bathroom, stuff like that.
Yeah. Which was cool. Like
it was great.
Yeah, like nothing against that. Like that was one of the best parts of
it. It was just different there. From the other part of the village.
Yeah, the other half of the village, like I said, it's like a subdivision kinda, but everybody has 5 acres of land. They actually have a school in the village where they teach all the kids. There's like 35 families that live here. Yeah, so there's a school, there's a barn, and the barn is called their goshala, and a goshala is like a cow shelter. Cows are very integral to the center of their belief system. It's like essentially what it all surrounds. The cow is very sacred. They do lots with the cow in terms of using their dairy for food. A few of them even told us that they drink their urine in order to cleanse themselves.
So the type of cows that they have are not like regular dairy cows or cattle cows that you like would usually see. They're cows like from India, so they look different. They have this big hump, and in that hump, I don't know how it happens, something with the rays of the moon or something, I don't know, something to do with the moon, but basically they can like turn their pee into gold. So there's like
trace amounts of gold.
So trace, it's not like straight up gold bar.
They're not shitting gold bricks.
No. It's like trace amounts of gold are found in their pee. So that's why they drink like cow pee, because it's supposed to be like very cleansing, and the gold is supposed to be very good for you.
Yeah, the gold is believed to be very cleansing. I remember looking this up afterwards, and it's been done traditionally for a long time, but there's no conclusive evidence on it.
But there's lots of like natural medicine that has conclusive evidence that it works, but people have been using it for years, and it's effective.
Yeah,
but
that's neither here nor there. Just wanted to mention that some of them drink cow pee.
Yeah, they were pretty forthcoming with telling us that they drink cow pee, but anyways. So we got there late at night the first night, so we didn't really see too much. The guy that we had been talking to online showed us where we were staying, which was like a beautiful fifth wheel, which is like a really big trailer with a wood stove, and it was amazing. So we just chilled out the first night, and then so finally we get into day one, and we meet up early in the morning to go do kirtan with the other volunteers.
You should tell them what kirtan is.
Kirtan is essentially chanting, but we go to meet up with the other volunteers. There was two girls that were there, I think just for a day, so they were leaving this day, and they were just checking out the village. They were thinking of staying for the entire summer. So we do kirtans, we do the chanting, we talk a little bit, we read a little bit from the Bhagavad Gita, which is like their holy book. And
Bhagavad Gita is the central text of Hinduism.
Yeah.
And just give like a brief outline of what it's about. So it's part of a larger text called the Mahabharata, which is the longest poem in human history. The Bhagavad Gita is right in the center of this book, and it's probably the most important text of all of Hinduism, people argue, along with the Upanishads. But the Bhagavad Gita is essentially about a battle between two warring factions of cousins. And the star of the book is Arjuna, Prince Arjuna. And he's having a very hard time with figuring out how to get over his mental struggle he's having with trying to overtake and kill his kinsmen.
So he's a warrior, and his duty is to fight as a warrior, but he has to fight his family. So he's going through like a moral battle with himself, and he doesn't want to fight his family, but he doesn't want to, you know, disobey his duty. So that's where Krishna comes in. He and Krishna are having this discussion about fighting and why he doesn't want to and why he should.
Yeah.
And
Krishna is his charioteer, and he doesn't realize until later on that it's Lord Krishna that he's in fact speaking to. And there's tons of good wisdom in the book. I've always personally read it as like a conversation between you and your higher self, or you and God, whatever words you want to put to that like higher sense of ourselves. And I've always taken it as like analogy, and lots of people have. There's like hundreds of interpretations of it, but that's one of the more popular versions of it. Yeah, but their interpretation of it,
it's a little different. So they have they have the Bhagavad Gita, but it's not the same as like the normal one you would get that is widely used by Hindus. So what it is still the same book, but each paragraph is like interpreted by the leader of the person who started this, the Hare Krishna movement.
His name is A.C. Swami Bhaktivedanta Prabhupada.
Yeah, I can't pronounce
his name. No, sorry. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
Yes, him.
Yeah.
So he started like the movement. It was handed down to him by someone else. Like it was started in India, and then he was like, he came to America to spread the word and whatnot. But anyways,
at the age of 69, which is really impressive, to be honest, he came over with $7
by boat to New York,
not knowing anybody. And he's amassed what is now still, I think, the largest growing cult in the entire world. And this man started it at the age of 69. And went on to publish like 25 books or something from the age of 16. So very impressive, like on paper.
Origin story. Yeah.
Very but he is riddled with controversy. He's quoted in multiple correspondences with people talking about how women are inferior.
Yeah, he's very misogynistic.
How they're not to be trusted. He's extremely misogynistic. And basically, like there's multiple emails of him going back and forth with people that are in the cult. Basically saying that your life has been ruined by your wife, you need to leave her because women are lesser and they're essentially not as equal to you and I being men.
Yeah.
Anyways, lots of controversy surrounding him. There's like websites of people who have been out of the cult and they're just like blackmailing him, or not blackmailing him, but outing him for everything. Anyways, really not a
very
really
controversial, not a,
yeah, controversial dude.
So he basically took the Bhagavad Gita and interpreted every single passage in it, and that's the book that the Hare Krishna movement uses.
It's called the Bhagavad Gita as it is what it's called,
which is very funny because he basically gave all of these little like blurbs of what he thinks. So is it really as it is? I don't think so.
Yeah, it would essentially be like somebody rewriting the Bible, but after every verse being like, this is what he actually meant.
Yeah,
this is what he actually meant,
pretty much.
Yeah, that's the entire thing.
So that's the book that they follow. So I'm pretty sure on the first day, I don't think it was the first day he told us anything, like kind of weird, but the first day was normal. We talked to the two other girls that were staying there, and one of them had told us that she was dealing with some health issues and she had quit her job and was kind of looking for, you know, something like purpose in life, and she couldn't work at the way she was doing things before. Like she just completely burned herself out and it really took a toll on her health. So she really wanted to come there for the summer. And she'd done other farm work before, so she was, like, super interested in the place.
She was a sweet girl.
Very sweet. She loved it. It was just, like,
you could tell there was some vulnerability there.
Yeah, like, she was going through a hard time in her life, which is, like, you know, cults typically prey on people who are going through hard times.
Yeah, and so
that'd
be a good
looking for purpose.
Good segue into the fact that the person who met us, first of all, was a 51-year-old man. He didn't look 51. It was only until we asked how old he was that he revealed to us. We were like, holy shit, I can't believe you're 51.
Yeah, he looked good for his age. Like, I never would have guessed he was in his 50s. He looked like he was in his, like, 30s.
Yeah, but we met his wife, who looked around our age, and we didn't even realize that they were married at first until she brought it up, like, later on in the day. And it wasn't until a few days later that we realized that they actually arranged their marriages. And so you can think what you want of arranged marriages. I personally don't have a stance either way. I know that there's cultures in India that is like a big part of their life is arranged marriage, and a lot of them go really well. But in this particular case,
it's like the community or the elders
really
who choose the partner for you. So I think with further research, we found out that you have to say like you want to be married. So he wanted to be married and she wanted to be married
within the cult.
Within the cult. And then they choose someone for you. So she was chosen for him. So she's been there for a year and a half. And he has been there for 12 years. He has 20, like, children in their 20s, and she's, like, 26.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I don't know. You can think what you want. Age is just a number. And I do believe that in a lot of ways, but because of the fashion that it happened in and her being there for such a short time and him being, like, basically well-established in the faith and, like, in the community, it just seemed weird.
Kind of whack.
Kind of whack, yeah. And, like, talking to her, like, we spoke to her on the first day, after the other two visitors left. And, you know, she was showing us around and we were having a great time and stuff. So we were asking her about, you know, like what it's like to live there and what her life was like before that, because we wanted to know like how she ended up there and why she wanted to join, because it's before we had any indication that it was a cult. We just thought it was an intentional community at this point. So we asked her, like, what was her life like before coming there? And she told us that she doesn't remember her life prior to, like, coming there. Like, and that was only a year and a half ago.
She barely remembers her life.
Yeah, she said that it's, like, something she doesn't even think about and, like, something so far in the past and stuff. And, you know, that's a red flag. Like, only being there for that long and feeling that distant from who you once were is, like, a huge red flag, because cults, like, notoriously want to take you away from your personality, and like they don't want you to be like an individual, really. So that was already happening to her,
and she had a head injury.
Yeah, so she was coming from a vulnerable place. She had a traumatic brain injury,
like one that didn't allow her to go back to work.
Yeah, she couldn't work normally anymore, so she couldn't function in society normal. She couldn't have like a normal job, so this was kind of her like last resort, or like saving grace, you could say. So they had definitely gotten her at the right time for her to be like more susceptible to, you know, the brainwashing that cults typically have and the community that they give you when you don't have any. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it was very strange, like being around people who were very clearly brainwashed, or just like, I don't even know if brainwashed is the right word.
Yeah. Brainwashed. Totally.
Okay. Yeah. Brainwashed. Cause like, it's almost like the reason
people drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Because Taylor and I grew up Catholic, and we met our fair share of people who believed in Catholicism, like, despite any...
Like, people who didn't question,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, people who didn't question. And so it was strange being around people who, again, didn't question what they were being taught, because it was much like the people that we grew up around, that we were kind of like, you people, like, don't even think about any alternatives, or, like, maybe this isn't true. Anyways, the reason is just, it's just kind of not there anymore. And
they blindly believe in a lot of ways.
And interestingly enough, one of the conversations we had with the guy who brought us in, he said that in the outside world, and they reference this a lot, the outside world. But in the outside world, you know, like, you're filled with anxiety because you don't know what to do with your life. And like, you're trying to figure things out. And it's very flustering and hard. But all you really have to do is submit to Lord Krishna and he'll figure everything out for you.
So essentially he's saying that, like, I think he said this multiple times, that you don't need to think for yourself. Whenever you are trying to think for yourself, don't, just submit to Lord Krishna.
Yeah, which is super concerning.
Yeah, and he'll think for you and everything will be fine. So if you just basically submit to Krishna, all is well. You don't need to think for yourself. All the decisions you'll ever make, you don't need to make. He'll make them for you, which is like, that's just not thinking for yourself is like a very scary thing to do. And the fact that is so much a part of what they believe and what they're told is like, you know, that's taking people away from their personalities. Like, not thinking for yourself, like, who are you then? You know, you're just a part of this thing now.
Yeah. And so I guess it's important to like tell you guys like who Krishna is. So Krishna is one of the godheads within Hinduism, or Vedic culture, and also the Hare Krishna beliefs. But what's the difference between the two between Hinduism and the Hare Krishnas is that the Hare Krishnas take Krishna to be the one supreme godhead. So all the other gods pray to Krishna. He is the center of the universe. He is the creator of everything. It's essentially how like really, really fundamental Christian people believe in Yahweh or God. Mm-hmm. It's very much the same way.
But it's a monotheistic version of Hinduism.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it.
So they don't only believe in Krishna, but Krishna is the supreme god, and believing that anybody else, like any other god of Hinduism being a supreme god, like, is wrong. Yeah. Essentially.
But with Hinduism is very much, you can pray to essentially whatever face of the divine you want to. Which is one of the reasons why I was really attracted to Hinduism, is because growing up, Catholicism never made sense to me. It never made sense that there was some sky god looking down on us, judging our...
And if you believe in Christianity or anything like that, we don't knock that. Just personally, I don't.
Yeah, our personal
experience, find that it aligns with me.
Yeah, our personal experience was not at all good, I guess I would
say. Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah. So in Hinduism, and one of the reasons why I was really attracted to it, you can essentially pray and worship to any face of the divine that you really want to. So it's not uncommon to see photos of Jesus Christ or photos of Buddha. Or the Virgin Mary inside of Hindu temples or Hindu shrines or anything that people have in their house to worship. And that's because they take all the faces of the divine to be representing the same thing, the one Brahman, that which lies underneath. There's universal consciousness. There's all kinds of different names for it.
Yeah. Hinduism has many gods, as I'm sure a lot of you probably already know.
Hinduism is extremely tolerant to other people's beliefs, and the Hare Krishna belief system certainly is not.
No. Yeah. It is much more close-minded than
He was very clear to us that Krishna is the one God that we should be praying to, and if we're not praying to Krishna, then we're doing something wrong. He was very, very clear about that.
Yeah. So, on day two, I think he started getting into some of the weirder stuff, because, you know, like, when you are in this situation, which I hope none of you ever end up in, they don't tell you the super weird stuff right away, because they don't want to scare you. They want to ease you in. They want to see if you yourself are drinking the Kool-Aid. They want to see if you believe. So basically, he started telling us that the Bhagavad Gita, like what they read, that book, is literal fact. Like, all of this actually happened. The conversations between Krishna and Arjuna are factual history. He's like, we believe them as real, not like parable or anything like that.
Yeah, and he was very much like, oh, and there's all these other interpretations, like, around the world where, you know, they think that this is an analogy or this is parable, and that's all crap.
Today's episode of the NPP is brought to you by the baby wipes in our bathroom cupboard. Without them, we would likely have to avoid interactions in public. If you stink like shit and find yourself at a grocery store, use promo code POSTAL15 at checkout for a weird look from the cashier.
So it was through conversations with the person that helped us on that really started to raise red flags for us and started to question what the hell it was we were doing there and what they actually believed in. So one of the conversations we had with them, because I was really curious about how you even end up in a place like this, how you end up with the haircut, how you end up believing these things. So I asked them, you know, like, so how did you end up with this movement, with this Vedic Eco Village? And he told me that it was at a time when he was in the States and he was questioning his God that he grew up on, which I believe was a Catholic God. And he never believes in the Catholic God because he wanted to sing and dance. That's what he said. He said he wanted to sing and dance about God. He didn't want to sit and pray. And so for anybody who doesn't know of the Hare Krishnas, that's what they're known for, is singing and dancing in the streets, wearing orange, looking like they're in a permanent state of ecstasy, chanting their chant, which is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. And they chant and they chant and they chant and they chant.
And they play drums and, you know, they look like they're having a grand old time. Like, they're depicted in movies as, like, looking like they're really fun. They wear, like, orange robes, which they really do. Like, they didn't there, but I know that's a thing. And, yeah, like, they were, like, very popularized in the media in, like, the 70s and stuff. So it's,
like George Harrison of the Beatles actually became a Hare Krishna, which is crazy enough.
Yeah. It was crazy. So basically the Hare Krishnas have four central beliefs. So you can't gamble, you can't have illicit sex, you can't eat meat, and what else? What's the fourth one?
And you can't...
Oh, no intoxication of any kind.
There you go. So no drugs, no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex.
So illicit sex, to get into what that means, because we didn't ask him what he meant by that when he told us about these rules. But illicit sex basically means that you can't have sex outside of having sex for procreation.
And after marriage.
And after marriage. So you can't have sex unless you're married.
Yeah, have sex unless you're married. And even when you're married, you can't have sex unless it's for... Procreation.
So if you're intending to have a baby, then sure, you can have sex, but otherwise no. So obviously this doesn't really, it's not very inclusive to people who are not like heterosexual, because obviously like any type of gay sex doesn't produce children. So
it's inherently homophobic.
Yeah, that right there says, like, that read between the lines, that's homophobic as hell. So that's pretty weird, but he didn't necessarily explain to us what that meant or anything. He didn't go into it.
Yeah, so no illicit sex means a lot of things, but one of the things it means is no gays.
Yeah, it means no gay people, which is awful.
Yeah, and illicit sex, I actually went, like, into a bigger deep dive into, like, why that was so important to them. And part of it was because that they think that pleasure also equates to essentially bad. Pleasure equals bad, much in the same way that a lot of religions think that pleasure equals bad. And they also think that if sex is had merely for pleasure... it'll produce children that are unwanted. So they also don't believe in birth control. Is another thing you have to read between the lines there, where it's like, okay, so if you're having sex, it's going to either lead to kids because you want them to.
Or no sex at all.
Or no sex at all.
So we didn't really fucks with that, obviously, because I don't know, like, I think that's so wrong to tell people, like, when they can or can't have sex or why.
We do drugs and we have sex.
We do drugs and we have sex. So we had sex there. So, and we did drugs there. So, you know, disrespectful, some may call it, but I think it's disrespectful to ask people what to do with their lives. Anyways, so when we
speak more on the drugs thing, because there's a certain, like, the revelation of why we were in a cult was
that's
because
what
Taylor
I was
smoked
say.
Some weed.
So I had been on a weed fast because I was previously addicted to weed. I would smoke weed every day, and you know, I was just like, I have to stop. So I challenged myself not to smoke weed for a month, which I did. And my end of the month, like, finally I could smoke weed again, was when we were at the cult. So I think it was like 3 or 4 days into being there. And I, you know, we're in this beautiful nature and scenery. I'm out on the deck of the cabin we're staying in and I'm smoking weed. No one's around. Like, we're like the furthest house on the property.
You can see all the stars.
Yeah, it was beautiful. So finally I smoke and then I get pretty high because, you know, it's been a month, and then I go inside and I start kind of having a panic attack, which, like, I've had, like, kind of episodes from smoking weed, but, like, never like this. And then I don't know why I'm panicking. So Liam brings me outside and is telling me to calm down and stuff. And all of a sudden, like, it's honestly, like, I didn't even think this thought. It just, like, came into my head and I just said it. And I was like, Liam, this is a cult. And he was like, no, it's not. Like, you know it isn't. I'm like, no, it's a cult. And I don't know how I came to that realization, but I did. So I think they never called themselves Hare Krishnas, ever. And I don't know how I knew what they were somehow. I think it's because we looked up their four core beliefs.
And we were singing it too.
Well, yeah, that, but they never say they're Hare Krishnas. So we looked up their core beliefs, and I think that's when we figured out, like, what this was, what we were in, what was going on. So we looked up their beliefs, and then we started, like, deep diving into...
Well, Taylor did without telling me first because she was baked and scared.
I was so high and scared. So I'm, like, doing all this research on what they are. So I'm telling Liam this. And then the next morning, we wake up, and I'm like, I think we should leave. This is a call. And Liam's telling me, like, people live differently. Like, don't judge them and stuff. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, and at this point, I kind of had come to terms with the fact that it was a cult, but... it became kind of fun for me to, like, live inside
so
a cult.
It was honest.
Because, like, you hear about cults through TV, through radio, through reading or whatever. But to actually live inside of one for a little bit, I was like, ooh, this is interesting.
Especially as a person who's not brainwashed, like, who's not drinking the Kool-Aid. Like, it's very interesting to watch them and what they do and why and how. Like, it's all so calculated to get you to join.
Yeah, it was really cool to be a fly on the wall. Like, even after the realization, it was a little weird and kind of spooky, but it was also really, really cool to
witness. It was definitely spooky.
To witness, yeah.
So we stayed one extra day after the realization because... it was kind of too late. We couldn't just leave. We weren't ready to leave. Like, we didn't have all our stuff ready because we were going to leave without saying anything to anyone. So anyways, the guy who we had been talking to for all these days, who was, like, teaching us about the movement and whatnot, comes to us in the morning like he does every day. And we do chanting and we talk about, you know, the Bhagavad Gita. He reads some stuff, whatever. So he asks us at the end of our little chat, so, have you guys had any realizations yet? Meaning, have you basically submitted your mind? Are you ready to submit your mind to Lord Krishna? Are you ready to do this, you know? And he's like, or are you just enjoying your time here?
I was fully prepared to submit my mind to Lord Krishna.
So, Liam had drank the Kool-Aid. No, I'm kidding. Neither of us were down for that. We're free-thinking people. We did not want to get involved. So, we just said, nope, no realizations. And he left after that. And then after he left, we spent the entire day researching Hare Krishna, like, the movement, people leaving, like, all of this stuff. Like, it was just, like, we were watching, like, YouTube videos of this girl series. She was, like, an Australian girl who was in the Hare Krishna cult in Australia.
Shouts out those Hare Krishnas on YouTube.
Those Hare Krishnas on YouTube. Yeah, watch it. And she was saying, like, her experience, how she joined, why she left, and how, like, kind of broken she was from the whole thing. Like, she was really trying to refind herself. Like, she had totally lost all of her her personality, her like sense of belonging, all of her friends had been, you know, she had gave them up so long before that, and then all of her friends ended up in, you know, they were in the cult with her. So she just kind of had nobody. So it was crazy. And yeah, so we're seeing all of this, like many different people's stories and, you know, reasoning why they left. So basically, I can't remember how Liam came across the village online. I think he said, yeah, he said earlier that he looked up a yoga ashram.
Yeah, yoga
ashram. And that's what they do. So the Hare Krishnas really stick to like the new age
spirituality movement. Organic movement.
Yeah, so they'll go to like yoga retreats or like yoga studios or
organic farming retreats.
Yeah, like festivals that are like based around spirituality, stuff like that. And they kind of like put their message in subtly. So they recruit people through that. So they're very smart about what they do, and they love when people in their movement become famous or are famous or get any sort of like recognition. They really like that. So we were watching one video, and it was like between this guy who was like the person who coined the term deprogramming and two Hare Krishna like officials, and they're going back and forth and stuff. And the guy who had, you know, like started the whole method of deprogramming was like totally calling them out, and the Hare Krishnas were undermining him like over and over. Like, they know how to speak to people and how to convince people. They're so good at it. So we were reading the comment, and all of these people were on the side of the Hare Krishnas. They're like, Hare Krishna is the best movement, it's the best thing to ever happen. Yeah, these people don't know what they're talking about, like, so defensive. And like we said before, this is the fastest growing cult, I think, in the world.
Yeah, like, I'm half expecting us to have some comments on this podcast.
Yeah, Hare Krishna's come after us. We are here to expose you for what you do. Brainwash people. Bad. Brainwashing is bad.
Bad Hare Krishna.
Bad Hare Krishna. Shame on you. But, you know, yeah, so after that day, the next morning, so the guy who we used to talk to, while we were there, he would come at like 9 to do chanting. So we got up at like 6 in the morning, packed up all of our shit, cleaned up the house we were in, and fucking just booted out of there. Like, we literally packed up the truck, and it was like 6 a.m. or something. We were like stealth mode trying to get out of this village, hoping nobody would see us. So I think we left a note. What did the note say?
Oh, it said, we have business to attend to in Kelowna, like, need to go, thanks, bye.
Yeah, we just fucking booked it out of there. And we have like camcorder videos of us being like leaving the cult and all this stuff. But yeah, it was like really comical. We just like fled from there.
Yeah,
but yeah, so we fled the Hare Krishna cult. We survived, no brainwashing necessary. I did think about it for a long time after.
If I can, I'll add in some clips from the camcorder at this point, just because it's raw and funny. There's actually, I think the beginning of it is like, oh, we're having fun here, and like we're pretending it wasn't a cult, and like we were joking around about it, and then the next clip is like, it's a cult, we fucked up.
Yeah, it's like, wow, look at this place, so beautiful, oh my god, it might be a cult, might not be, and then the end we're like, it's a cult. Mm-hmm. Like, confirmed. So,
and to be fair, and at this point I want to be fair to the experience that we had and the people that are there, I don't think they're bad people. I don't think the people that were there are bad people. I think that they're lost. They're entrenched in an ideology that has given them peace, or what they think has given them peace, and they want other people to attain the same peace that they have, is essentially what I got out of it. Because they, like, in their heart, it really didn't seem like they were malicious people. The people we stayed with were really sweet. They fed us like amazing food. They were never too pushy with anything, but
all of that is strategic, and it is all for a purpose. So whether you think it's malicious or not, it is with the intention of getting you to join, and that comes at a big cost when you really think about it.
Right. But my point was just that, like, I don't think that they're even aware of the fact that they're doing it.
I don't think that all of them are aware of the fact.
The people we were staying with, at least, it didn't feel like they, like, it wasn't like some planned out thing that they were doing. It was more so they believed it and they wanted us to believe it.
Well, this is what they're taught to do. They are taught to recruit people, yeah. And that, you know, they are taught to, they don't know if they're brainwashing you or trying to brainwash you, but that is essentially what they're doing.
Right. Which is like, to some extent, it's kind of what all of us do in life, is like, you believe a certain way.
I don't think so.
No, like, to a certain extent, there's like a spectrum where it's like, I believe a certain thing and I want to convince you, like, no, like, this is, like, life is actually about this, or life is actually about this. But theirs is very much
between come live here, yeah, stay, like, live by our rules, do what we do, and then keep doing it to other people. Grow the movement, grow this, grow that. And it's like at all costs, you know, at the cost of yourself.
Yeah, and a lot of what they talked about was actually kind of apocalyptic.
They're kind of preppers, like doomsday prepper type people.
Yeah, it was very much a prepper kind of atmosphere, just in the way that they talked about things. Because in the first couple of days, when we were talking about the outside world, I just thought they were saying society, in the same way that like Taylor and I will talk amongst ourselves, like, oh, society's broken in this way, or it's broken in this way. And so it seemed like that at first, but then like the longer that we stayed there, it was more like, no, outside bad, inside good. Like everything out there is stupid and they're doing it wrong.
They're like, this is the only way.
Yeah.
Basically.
They were basically saying this is the absolute only way that humans are supposed to live. Every other way of life is bad and it's just leading to the end of the world. Which, you know, fucking maybe, but you should have the freedom to like choose how to live your life. And there's multiple solutions to all the problems that the world is having right now, and submitting yourself to Lord Krishna is but one in a sea of solutions.
Yeah, there's other ways. So be vigilant for these things, because it's hard to tell what is really going on. Like when you read things online or whatever, like they entrap you in a way. So here is a reading from a Workaway that we found online. So Workaway is a website where you can go and volunteer your time, and they take you in, they feed you, and they house you. So this is what the Workaway says. Help a family develop an off-grid eco-homestead yoga and bhakti retreat in BC, Canada.
Bhakti yoga is one of the forms of yoga. Yeah. So there's a few forms of devotion within Vedic culture, and bhakti is one of them. Bhakti being devotion to the divine.
So it says, our homestead and local village is a very unique combination of off-grid Canadian wild country in an intentional spiritual community, Hare Krishna, which is a traditional bhakti yoga path from India.
Yeah, and so I wrote this down in a notebook, and I starred traditional because it's not traditional. Like this is a newer age type of newer age version of like an older idea, but it was all brought over by one man in the 70s. So you can't call it a fucking traditional bhakti yoga path. It's not.
So so it says, we welcome guests who are interested in and open to off-grid and eco-living and development, Indian Hindu spirituality, spiritual culture, traditional yoga, and sattvic, which is vegetarian lifestyle. When you live simple, you live clean and sober. So obviously no drugs and that stuff, but they don't mention no illicit sex. They don't mention, that they believe all of these things to be, you know, they believe the Bhagavad Gita is like historical truth. They don't tell you any of these things. They don't tell you they're gonna brainwash you anyways. So they put this online for anyone to see. People could just volunteer. They don't ask that much of you. It looks beautiful, looks amazing. And people really do go. Like, we read the comments of people who had gone and they said they had a great time. So people do leave, they do get away, but it is scary that these things are just out there and you have to decipher like what's safe and what's not, and they don't necessarily, like, they're not forthcoming with what they are, obviously, or else why would you go?
Yeah, and just another thing I wanted to add about like people who are very devout and one way of thinking and don't think otherwise is that it's a short step from being harmless people who don't commit any harm, don't harm anybody, to Lord Krishna wants you to do this. Lord Krishna wants you to hurt this person. Not that there are many accounts of this actually happening.
But it could. It's an easy intersection.
But if you hand over your mind to a belief system and you don't have any free thinking left, then you end up in a very, very, very scary territory where you will do something and just think that it's completely...
It.
Yeah, and not question it at all. Like, it's similar to how the Manson family committed murders on behalf of being brainwashed by Charles Manson. It's very similar how they were like, up until that point, pretty harmless people, but their minds had been forfeited to somebody else who had a more malicious intent, and they committed malicious atrocities.
Yeah, not to say that the Hare Krishnas are killers or anything.
Yeah,
but
not to say that.
This
say
is
that
the
all.
Fastest growing cult, again, in the world. So these people are being brainwashed, and they're losing who they are, and they're submitting to this way of life. So, and they're like, you know, separating themselves from their families, and the cult becomes their whole world, and they forget who they are. So that's very scary, you know? No one should have to do that. Unless they so choose to, and they should choose to on their own fruition, you know, or their own accord.
Yeah. So keep your eyes out for those crazy.
Keep your eyes peeled, and if you need help escaping the cult, we will help you. Reach out to us.
Yeah. So they're also known as ISKCON. So they're known as the International Society of Krishna Consciousness. They're known as Krishna Consciousness. I think they also have like Krishna.org. Yeah. But just keep your eyes peeled.
You need to be a detective, okay? Investigate. Yeah. So don't make the same mistake we did. Don't end up in a cult.
Or do
if you want to. It was kind of fun, but don't let them brainwash you. Keep your mind strong. Yeah. So thank you everyone for listening to our second episode. We appreciate it so much, and many more to come. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hello, precious listener. We spoke with the magic redwood tree in the forest, who informed us that those of you who made it all the way to the end of the episode would be granted immortality. He relayed this message to all of the trees around the world. Find a tree nearest to you and whisper the following sentence: life, life, everlasting life, if only Rihanna was my wife. And you shall be granted immortality. Oh, and please follow us on Instagram at no.postal. Life is good, please enjoy it. Peace out.